Look at you all tightened up because you're on a show now.
I just worked. First, I'd like to introduce myself to the audience. My name is Oliver Hudson, in case you don't know. I worked in Albuquerque today, this morning, 8:30 a.m. call. Did one scene, got on a plane, and now I'm in Los Angeles with my children's. And then I go back on Friday. So I'm like back and forth and back and forth. So I still have my makeup on. I got shit in my hair. You know, I'm fucking camera ready, baby.
Is this your look? This is your look for the show with the...
Yeah, kind of like that. I'm doing my hair for those of you. I'm pushing it back. You know, kind of a little greasy-ish kind of, you know what I mean? FBI.
Yeah.
Hot FBI guy, you know?
Hot FL, if you do say so yourself.
Yeah.
I got a lot to talk to you about.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Your voice sounds like...
What?
Aaron's reminding me of Instagram. Oh. She's reminding to talk to you about something that happened to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Always
getting notes from your wife. I love it.
I know. I got a note. So,
how good is this? Can Aaron hear me?
Yeah.
So I get to New York. Michelle and I fly. We get to the hotel. Natalie's walking her dog. We're staying at the Greenwich Hotel. Natalie's walking her dog, and she says, "Hey, I'm going to be out in front of your hotel in the next 5 minutes. Come down and say hi." Because we were not having dinner that night. We were having dinner the next night. So I came down. I hadn't seen her in a month. She walks her dog up the street, give each other a big hug. We're talking for literally 2 minutes. And she goes, "Oh, by the way, you know, it's Fashion Week here in New York." And I said, "Oh, no, I didn't know that." Somehow I wasn't invited in the Met Ball or whatever it's called. So then this SUV pulls up and the paparazzi gathers around. And she's like, "Oh, my God, it's, you know," Natalie's like, "Oh, it's going to be a big star. Who is it?" "It's your fucking sister."
Yeah.
Like the one person I know. It wasn't Lady Gaga. It wasn't Jennifer Lopez. It wasn't Bradley Cooper. It wasn't any. It's like somebody I can text and somebody that Natalie knows. And
right.
It was like, oh my. And then it was great. I haven't seen your sister in a year.
No, I know, but it's funny because it's like, it's this like sort of this double-edged feeling in a sense where like, oh, is it going to be someone cool who's going to come out of the limo? And you're kind of anticipating someone exciting. Yeah. And then it's Kate, which is always great to see her, but it's sort of like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I could do this, you know. She'd come to St. Louis if I needed. Well, no, she wouldn't. You might.
I would. I'm there, baby. Just buy me the ticket.
Yeah, but
first
it was
class.
But it was great to see her. And I saw Danny and I met Ronnie for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, she was. So we went to her. Natalie and I went up to her room. Natalie brought her dog. And so we caught up for a minute. And then I never saw her again. That was the last time I saw her.
That makes sense. Actually, she was just an apparition. It wasn't even her, it was a ghost. Let me ask you a question. If you could have anyone choose someone to walk out of that limo that you would be so excited to see, who would it have been?
The Rock.
Really?
No.
You know, if boom, the door opens and so-and-so steps out, you'd be like, oh, shit, that's pretty
fucking
cool. Yeah,
okay. My answer is Heather Thomas from 1985.
Are you kidding me? Okay. So Heather Thomas, I can't believe you just said that. I don't even know if any of our listeners know who the hell she is. You know,
yeah.
Was she in The Fall
but
Guy?
But if you're of a certain age, yeah, you know who the hell Heather Thomas is. Jesus.
That's crazy because one of my early memories, Heather Thomas was shooting, had a photo shoot at my friend Dylan's house. And Barbara, her mom, was my mom's best friend. She actually introduced me to golf. Barbara did. And I remember hiding under tables with Dylan, trying to get a glimpse of this girl. And all I knew is that her name was Heather Thomas. I didn't know where she came from. She was just stunning.
She came from heaven, Oliver.
She did.
She came from heaven.
She did. It is a very early sexual memory for me where I was just enamored with, like, oh my God.
Everybody my age, I'm 52. Most of my friends had a Heather Thomas poster in their bedroom.
Oh my God. I got to look her up. I cannot wait to look her up.
Yeah, she was phenomenal. So it would have to be
Heather Thomas
from 1985 or the Weird Science Girl.
Kelly LeBrock.
No,
that's a good game. See, I'd have Nicole Eggert from Charles in Charge probably step
out.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. You know? That's good.
Yeah, she was my jam. I had a poster of her in my room. And another vivid memory, I had a massive fever. And you know how you have those like fever nightmares? You know, have you read like those fever dreams where you're awake, but you're losing it? And that poster literally came off of my wall and was like floating around my room. So I had, Nicole Eggert chasing me in a fever dream around my childhood bedroom.
Better than having Scott Baio chase you around.
Oh my God. She was my number one too, man.
Heather, she was great.
Oh God, Nicole Eggert was so pretty.
Yeah, funny. So that was that. And then here's what I'm realizing.
Okay.
It is innate in all of us to be manipulators.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because we are now going full steam ahead with this sleep training for our three-year-olds.
Oh.
Where they have the, it's called a monkey lock, where the door can open a little bit, which I don't really understand. I guess that gives them a little glimpse of hope. It's like leaving the cell door cracked open in Alcatraz so that they can see what's happening in San Francisco. So the things open just a little bit. Last night, they did a decent job of going to sleep. I was the one that slept upstairs. I don't want to be downstairs. And Michelle got home. She was working. She slept in our bedroom downstairs. So I slept decently. And then I wake up because the boys are up. And I let them out of their room, which is like the biggest demerit that I should be given comes from that. Because I thought it was 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought, and I'm like, oh my God, guys, you guys did such a good job, but it's still dark. And if you guys go back to sleep, we're going straight to the toy store on Saturday. And Wyatt, my little genius boy, goes, "We've got plenty of toys. We don't want to go to the toy store. We just want to sleep with you." I was like, they just threw toys out of the window.
Yep.
And then they're like, "Mommy, I love you. Daddy, I love you so much. Mommy, I love you. I love you, Daddy. Please come in. Why are you doing this to me? Why? Let me out of here. Why? I want to get out of here. Why are you doing this to me? Why?" And then 5 minutes later, they're asleep. And in the morning, they don't remember it. They don't even reference it. But in the middle of the night at 3:45, they were throwing a trip to the toy store out of the window to get their way.
Yeah. Wow.
They're three.
Wait a minute. So did you left them in their room while they were saying, "Mommy, Mommy, Daddy, I love you." And you were like, I'm sorry, you got the monkey lock on.
Monkey lock time.
You can get a little glimpse of heaven. There is the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, but it's just not there yet. So,
right.
But then you just stayed strong. And how long, honestly, before they were actually asleep?
Honest to God, no more than 5 minutes.
Isn't that fucking crazy, man? Like, you got to get over this idea that you're hurting them in some way.
Exactly.
You know?
And Michelle cannot right now. I've done it now for three nights. She was gone. I'm over it.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything. There's nothing in their room that they can get hurt with.
Yeah.
They're not being abused. They're fine. So it's time to grow up a little bit.
Yeah.
And we do two books. They have to be in their bed, legs under the sheets, head on the pillow. And if they don't do that, they don't get their books, which they do.
Yeah.
And whatever. And then it's like, good night. And they throw a shit fit and then they're over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an act.
Well,
it's
it's interesting because it's really a first time parent thing and you're not that. So there's two different schools, not schools, but you're a salty veteran. You're calloused, man. You've been through it. And I can only say that because I am as well. I mean, when Aaron and I had Wilder, our first, it was horrifying. We were trying to sleep train him. He was 3 weeks early. He looked like a baby bird who just fallen out of his nest. I'm like, oh God, we have an ugly, weird kid. All right, that's fine. I'll get over that. But just go to sleep. And then we put him in the bed. We just didn't know what the fuck we were doing, you know, and it was this first time thing. Cut to Rio. It's like, oh, stay in your room. Sorry, throw up in your bed. I don't even care in your crib. Like, right. You are staying in there, and that's just the way it's going to be, you know?
Right, but you kind of blew my whole act when last week, because my wife, unlike your wife, listens to our podcast, and she's like, I agree with Oliver. I agree with Oliver, mm-hmm. where you had said, hey, eventually they're not going to sleep in your bed. Mm-hmm. Eventually they're going to put their own clothes on. Mm-hmm. Eventually they're going to, I'm like, I got it. But eventually I'm going to be dead. So between now and then, I don't want to be juggling and laying in their room until 10 o'clock at night while I'm holding their hand so that they drift off to sleep in their little cocoon.
Yeah, I mean, if you tally up all those hours, that's at least half a year right now.
Yes.
You know? I mean,
yes, and emotionally and mentally, it's more than half
yes,
a year.
Yes, in time,
I am
time,
aging
it's
before
half
your
year.
Eyes. I'm like, my face is like the guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah.
It just melts in front of your face.
I know,
me.
But once you do it, and once they break through, then you're golden, you know? But then mm-hmm. it's on to the next problem. You know, it's like, oh, we conquered this, and you think life is easy, and maybe it is. And then it's on to the next thing. And then there's something else that happens, you know.
Well, then they're not going to sleep in their bed. Then they're not going to sleep in their bed with their pull up. Then it's going to be
right
underwear, and it's going to be the piss and shit show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I've said this before, but I want to write a children's or a parenting book or a parenting pamphlet, really, just called Fear and Bribery. You know, because that's literally how it's done. You can read all of the best authors and all the most world-renowned, you know, parental writers in the country, in the world. At the end of the day, it comes down to fear and bribery. Everything gets thrown away. When you are
yeah.
on your razor's edge and your nerves are frayed, then it just becomes, if you do this, I'll give you this. Or if you don't do this, you're not going to get this. I mean, that's literally what parenting comes down to. And potty training was the same way with us. We used to sit Wilder on the little toilet for like hours. He would just be sitting there, and I had like a cup of M&Ms, like waiting. And when he peed, right. I gave him the M&M. I mean, he's like a dog. It worked. Yeah, Aaron's right next to me. She goes, all of our kids were potty trained at 18 months wearing underwear because we just kept them plopped. Not at night. Yeah, but we kept them plopped down. Gave them a little, oh, good boy, a little pee-pee. Here's a little M&M.
Right. I mean, that's, first of all, I would love to canvas all the so-called parental experts.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see how their kids turned out.
That's a great idea.
Let's round them all up.
Yeah.
Let's get every one of these people, all these experts, and
yeah.
go, okay, now we'd like to interview your kids. You need to leave the room. Or we're going to visit your kids talking through one-way glass on a phone while they... while we're taking everything out of our pockets
yeah.
so that they can't escape from a mental institution.
Yeah.
But I really have a hard time buying into, and maybe this is just being cynical, that anybody is any better at this than anybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody's finding their own way. Nobody's got the handbook, the mm-hmm. rule book. You know, nobody came down from heaven and said, here's how it needs to be done. And if you don't do it this way, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just everybody finds their own way.
Yeah. And by the way, I think that if parents sort of really lived by what you just said, there is this weight that gets lifted off of your shoulders. It does alleviate some of that pressure to be perfect and, you know, not screw up your kids. I've said this before too. We're all screwing up our kids. It's just about what degree, really. You know, we do our best given the tools that we have and given the personalities of our age child. I mean, if you have multiple kids, they're all so different. And the way
right.
that I did it with Wilder is not the way I can do it with Bodhi. With Wilder, you know, I could, you know, you raise your voice and he responds. With Bodhi, you raise your voice and he doesn't give a shit. You know, same tactic, different personality.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more from Oliver and me. You've said that a bunch with regard to it's not a matter of if you're screwing up your kids.
Yeah.
It's a question of how much. I think they're screwing me up because I've never had less of a fuse. I've never had less patience.
I know.
I've never I love them. I want to eat them. I love them so much. But oh my God, it's just a lot of work. And right now with two of them.
Oh, dude, when you're one in goes a gnarly down, spot ugh. Right now. You've got twins at the age where it's just gnarly with one. You know? That's a crazy age.
Yeah. It's so then there's that. And then there's picking up the boys and one of the two of them at an unnamed school in an unnamed city. Okay, St. Louis. when one of them got in the car, the teacher said, well, we had a little issue today at nursery school, or whatever the hell you call it, at three. Somebody bit Wyatt.
Oh.
I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. She's like, but we had a long talk about it. This person did not break the skin. I'm like, okay, we're good. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
He'll be fine. I'm like, why? It was, and he didn't even care.
Right.
So,
well,
the bigger deal you make of it, the more he's going to make it.
Totally. This is more of it seems like a teacher issue than it is a child issue. You know what I mean? It's like they're covering their ass. They're just having to, when why is probably like, all right, whatever, I got bit and I forgot about it already.
Right. Yeah. And he's fine. The best thing was that Blake was more worried about it than Wyatt. Mm. Wyatt was the one that was bitten, but Blake is the defender. Like if I mess with Wyatt, Blake comes at me.
Oh, really?
If I'm like, you know, pushing him or messing with him and, you know, like pulling a little hair or something just to kind of get his goat a little bit, Blake will come at me fists up like, get off him.
Wow.
Like, yeah. So I love that. So I the fact that she said, you know, Blake was really worried about Wyatt.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's cool. I love that.
Yeah.
That's so great. I mean, honestly, like that's what my kids are all amazing, but you watch them go from being so close. And they're still in love, of course, but, you know, they get older and they separate. And then you feel that and there's something that is that's nostalgic and you long for it. And then I get upset, like, you need to love your brother. You need to love your sister. Treat her right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, because I watch them sort of separating a little bit and it's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, yeah. But I can tell you because I've seen the other end of the rainbow here. My daughters would get into it. They were very close. Then they'd get into it. Then my older daughter is just really a little more needy in the cutest way. She used to pay her little sister to come sleep in her room, sleep in her bed, because she just wanted company. And then now there's such a closeness between the two of them. It's the greatest thing. And they're young adults. You know, with very serious boyfriends, but it's like, do not mess with my sister. Mm-hmm. And seeing that is so great because my sister and I are best friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, she got the keys to all of my information, my bill paying, my whatever. She's got everything, but she's also my best friend and somebody that I really confide in and whatever. We were not that way as kids. We fought like cats and dogs. She was a handful and I had to be the dad because my dad was gone a lot traveling. And now, you know, my point is we traveled a different path, but we ended up in the same place. And now my daughters are so close and your kids are going to be so
I think that, I think they will. I honestly have PTSD from myself. You know, from the way that I treated Kate growing up, I watch the boys sometimes give Rio shit and it makes me crazy because I see myself in them with my sister and I boil. It's like, don't you touch her. And they're like, Dad, she's always trying to get us in trouble. And I'm like, no, she's not, you know, even though they're probably right. But I have this weird thing that because I was such an asshole to Kate, I do not want them to follow in that, on that path.
Yeah.
With their sister, you know, but they'll be close. I'm not really worried. It's just them drifting apart a little bit.
Your whole family is very close.
Yeah.
I know you feel tension from time to time, but you're closer than most. I don't see a lot of families that want to be around each other as much as you guys do.
Yeah.
So that's good.
No, for sure. For sure.
And Kate's engaged. She's so good at keeping stuff close to the vest. I didn't even know she was engaged. I was there in the wolf's den with the two of them and talked to Danny forever, and that never came up. And then 6 minutes later, I read on the New York Post, my New York Post app, that they're engaged.
Yeah, I know. They kept it quiet, you know. It's cool. I'm excited. You know, I'm excited for Kate and Danny.
He's the best.
He's just so great.
Love Danny.
He's just so God. He's very grounding and very normal, and I love him, and he's just a fun, sensitive human being, you know. I think they're good for each other. You know, hopefully it works. Hopefully it all works out forever and ever and ever. But fuck, you never know. That's the beauty about my sister, though. You know, I love that about her. Her freedom of, you know, just sort of saying, hey, this is who I am. Yeah, I have three kids with three different dudes. I don't give a shit. This is my life, and I'm happy, and this is how I do it. You know?
If you have a problem with it, that's your problem.
Yeah, that's your problem. Not mine. You know, I love that attitude of hers. She's just unafraid, you know?
Yeah, and I wish I had more of that.
No, God. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
Why did you get kicked off Instagram?
Oh, it's funny. I was going to talk about that. I didn't get kicked off Instagram. I got a notice that one of my posts had been taken down due to nudity. And it was from 2018, and they just took it off my public feed. And it was me, you know, doing certain some OTG off the grid sort of stupid wacky thing, and I'm running away naked. It's my ass just running away in the snow in Colorado, and I'm just screaming my head off like horrific screams. It's just weird, you know. And it was from 2018. Then I get this notice that it's been removed due to nudity, and I'm like, what the fuck? It's so crazy. Then I went down an Instagram model rabbit hole, just looking at what is actually on Instagram. It's crazy the things that they're allowing on Instagram and taking my gross jiggling ass off. That's comedic. I mean, these girls are practically naked. Yeah, they're wearing clothes.
Oh my God.
But, you know, and they're removing my jiggling ass.
Well, yours was just insulting.
Who was I insulting?
Just the human race that had to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the argument is could be that these are beautiful women with beautiful bodies.
Right. Yours was an art. Yours was just weirdness.
Yeah, but weirdness is art.
But do they have the ability to go into my mind and make me unsee it?
No, not yet. That's probably coming in the next 10 years. But
so it can be erased from my memory.
I guess
I remember it.
The question
is jarring.
The question is, though, why now? It's from 2018. And how does something like that get removed? Did someone have to, you know, report me? I mean, is that what had to happen?
Yeah, you went in front of the parole board, and now
I'm like Sirhan.
Yes. Yeah. Now you're tagged, and you know, good luck living the life you want to live going forward. You know, that whole thing has messed you up for life.
I don't understand, though. I guess someone had to, I don't know. You know what? I should just repost it and see what happens.
Test them. That's what I want to do with 23andMe. I want to spit into another jug and see if I come back 99% Irish and 1% English and no percent anything else.
Is that what you are?
It was like 94% Irish and then some part English. And my mom was insulted. I mean, her last name's Linsnick.
Right.
She's Polish.
Right.
She's German. It's like, well, that's not right. I'm your mother. And I'm like, I don't take this personally. I don't know. I just spit into a test tube and I sent it off. And all of a sudden I'm like a
leprechaun.
I'm like selling Lucky Charms.
Well, you and Aaron both. She's a a leprechaun. I used to call her my little leprechaun when we were first started dating because she looked like this hot little leprechaun.
Yeah. Well, I'm not that, but I am like almost all Irish.
Well, you know what's weird is I did 23. I did Ancestry and then I did 23andMe. So I did both. And the technology gets better and better and they keep updating your genetics as the testing gets better, I guess. So I started out a certain percent Italian and then it keeps building and building and building until I'm finally sort of like living on the Amalfi Coast. Like, right. I mean, I don't know why it's happening. I get an update every month and a half. It's like, oh, you're even more Italian. Hey, you know, it's like, it's weird. I don't know why that's happening, but I'm becoming more Italian.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Does that now allow you to audition for more roles in Hollywood? Don't you have to be, mm-hmm. don't you in Hollywood now have to be exactly
what
you're reading for?
Yeah.
Like you can't stretch and be anything you're not.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't play Brad Pitt's role in with the terrible Irish accent in whatever movie that was with Harrison Ford.
Right. I think with accents you're okay. You know,
accents,
I mean?
You're okay.
I think with accents you're okay. But I you know, if I'm playing like an Italian guy, I think that's okay.
So you're good. You're fine.
I'm good.
Well, you are Italian.
I'm Italian, right. I'm good. Yeah.
Godfather 4.
Aren't they doing the Godfather TV series or am I crazy? I think I'm
No, they're doing
it.
The Sopranos.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. That's
the prequel to the Sopranos, which you could now be in.
That's right. Well, Gandolfini's son.
The many bridges or the many something of
yeah, and it's Gandolfini's son is playing him.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. You speak the truth. Should we do some viewer?
Let's do it.
Otherwise known as listener things.
Yeah.
Why do I always have to be the one to read these things? Because I'm the announcer.
Yeah. By the way, how was Sunday?
It was good. It was good. Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about that. But Sunday was great. I mean, it was a blowout game, but it was good to be back. But Saturday night at Citi Field on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 was a night that I don't think I'll ever forget. I mean, nobody will ever forget 9/11, but that celebration and remembrance of that night 20 years later was, wow, mm-hmm. It was powerful. That is the first time in a long time I've actually cried.
Wow, you cried.
I cried during the pregame.
You never cry.
No, I'm a pretty easy cry, but I cried during the pregame and was thankful that
wow.
I didn't have to say anything for a little while because I was choked up. But
wow, I got to see it. I got to see it. I didn't watch the sort of the celebration, you know, or the recap, I guess. I didn't see it. It was good. Well produced.
I'm assuming it was the Mets and Major League Baseball, but it was so great, you know, when they had the first responders come out and then they had ex-Met players with each, you know, the firefighters and then the police officers and then you hear the stories. And I interviewed a guy who lost his brother, a firefighter, and he walked in his honor, raising money from, I guess he ended in New York. He went the Pentagon or he went DC, but the Pentagon to the field in Pennsylvania to back to the city in Ground Zero. He walked it to raise money for families that were affected by losing somebody, a loved one during 9/11.
Wow. Wow.
It was great. And the guy was such a normal, you know, he was a firefighter. The brother who died was his little brother. It was a family of firefighters. Just kind of it's just the quintessential American family that just, and they basically raised their little brother and he passed away and this guy had five kids and.
Wow. Man. No, I know. I was in Albuquerque. I actually flew on 9/11, and then I had a couple days off, and I went down the 9/11 new documentary rabbit hole. There's one on Netflix. There's one on Our history, I think the History Channel did one really incredible docu-series, and it is just unreal.
The one that there's one that Michelle told me to watch. It said it's just the best thing she's seen. It's called, she said you need to watch Turning Point 9/11 yeah. and the War on Terror on Netflix.
Yeah, it's great. I watched it. It's pretty incredible. And then there's another one that really just deals with the day of 9/11, and the footage is unbelievable. They've got new audio, fresh footage that you've never seen before, closed circuit TV stuff. It's horrible. I mean, it's so tragic, and to relive it again, to watch these images, it's just unbelievable. You know, we forget, you know, it's like you never forget, but you sort of do and until it's brought back. And it's just unfucking believable what happened on that day.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And
it's almost like you got, because I'm sure you were like me. I didn't know you back then, but I'm sure you were like me that I was just mesmerized. And I'm sure there were some things that you almost repress mm-hmm. remembering because it was just surreal, and then feeling vulnerable in your own country and being in large groups. It was just mm-hmm. it's hard to believe. And I think we talked about this the other day.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
It's hard to believe that actually was the overriding feeling I felt, was that we're all susceptible to something like this happening. Yeah. And we are, I mean, but you know, to yeah. a certain degree.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it went well. I wish I saw it. I didn't get to see it.
If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues, and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
That's you. That's right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break.
All right. I have these pulled up.
All right. Go ahead. Let's go.
I see that there's somebody who just continually shoots us questions.
M. Night Shyamalan.
A lot of questions. Ali, describe your life using film titles.
Oh my God! Jesus Christ! That's so difficult. I don't know. I wouldn't even know where to start.
It's a lot of Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Right.
With some Parenthood.
Parenthood.
Mixed in.
A little Sleepless in Seattle.
I don't know.
And, you know, when Aaron and I get it going, maybe a little Splash.
One of the all-time greatest. I consider making my daughters watch Splash when they were young is a great stroke of parenting.
Yeah, Splash was great.
So good.
Tom Hanks, that dude, unbelievable. Just in everything. And then, of course, ending off with There Will Be Blood. I think that's...
Yeah. Go ahead.
You abandoned my boy. I abandon my boy.
I love that. Okay. Let's see. Michelle Linza. Can you give us an update on your friend who lives in Dubai and his daughter's relationship? It's not improved. But he just lost his dad. And he is, he's one of those guys that... We were friends in college, but we haven't seen each other much since then. I'd never knew him before college, and we've become closer and closer and closer, and kind of talking him through that. You know, he went through a lot of the same story that I went through with my dad, which was basically having a conversation with his father, telling him, I'm done. I don't want to fight this anymore. Let me go. And I had that same conversation with my dad. And so being able to use my life experience, you know, from 2002 when this happened to my dad, and be able to apply it to my friend Lee, I think was helpful. And it's funny that we get that question today because I got a text from him that he's on his way back to Dubai. But he's been here for the longest time and had to deal with his dad passing away. And he was on the other side of the earth. And it just so happened that it was kind of the same situation. I think his dad was waiting for Lee to come home and make sure everything was okay. And Lee found this incredible letter that his dad had written him just by happenstance. It laid out exactly what his dad wanted after his death. And so it's a sad story, but a beautiful story, and I'm really proud of my friend. So I think he's been through a lot, but he's doing good.
Great.
He really is.
Good to hear.
Why didn't Oliver do the Nashville final show with all the cast? Why did you tap out of that? Did you do that? I didn't even know you did that.
Yeah, I think they asked me to come down. You know, I think I was working, actually. It was a sort of a celebration, I think, at the Ryman or something like that, where the cast was getting on stage and doing a whole sort of thing, and I wasn't able to make it.
Yeah, I read at the time, and this could be wrong, that you had a tough time with that stage bow that everybody does, kind of the hop and then the bow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't find the timing, you know?
Yeah.
And
everybody else, where you all grab hands and you do the little, yes.
Yep, yeah. Everyone would go before me and then yank me down. And
you yank Connie Britton's shoulder out of the socket. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I keep referencing Connie Britton in that show because I don't know anybody else that was in it. Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah, was she very in there? Good. Very
Hayden
good.
Hayden Panettiere.
Hayden Panettiere.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't make it. I think I was working. Nothing too exciting. Not a good story to tell.
Joe, can you? This is the same guy. This guy's asked like 55 questions. I'm not even going to read it because it's too many from him.
That's our one listener. Come on.
Huh?
It's our one listener.
We've got one listener. Yeah, this is kind of like college radio right now.
It's so true, especially even the way it's all set up, you and I.
I mean, I'm barely can get online. You're on this thing. We send it to this genius Josh who cuts it all up, and then it comes out, and I don't even know how it all happens.
I have no idea. It's such college radio. By the way, that's a good name for a title for a podcast.
Yeah.
College radio.
Look, I'm at Kinko's. My credit card expires after an hour, so I gotta go.
Let's go. We'll talk about it later.
I'm on a burner account right now.
You're on a burner Zoom. You're on a burner.
Yeah. I am. Yeah.
All right, good. Well, we covered some ground and we got
Did
some,
you know that I go to time. Kinko's every week? Did you know that?
Oh, do you really to do your laminating?
Yeah, to do my boards for football.
That's so funny. Do they know you over there?
Oh my God, Kathleen. She's the greatest lady of all time. She gets my stuff done. Like I don't even have to say anything. It's like, I got it.
Really?
I put my little boards in place and boom, I'm out the door to go do my football game. Yeah, I don't think I could live without Kathleen.
Well, you know what I'm gonna get you for Christmas is a laminator.
Well, it's not laminate. It's 11. I need an 11 by 17 printer, which at one point I had. But then I go in and I spiral bind them. And I mean, you've seen my stuff before. Yeah.
All right.
But go ahead. I would not laugh at that gift horse. I would not laugh in the face of that, in the mouth. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Yeah. That.
Let's end right
you
there.
You buy me a laminator and I will laminate the shit.
Out of things. Okay, good.
All right.
All right, Josef.
All right. Hey, whenever you go back to Albuquerque, you make us proud in the Fox family. You make great TV.
Yeah, baby. We're together now, man. I'm excited.
Same family.
Same family. That's right.
Same damn family.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
all right, bud. All right, Hojo.
See ya.
Bye. Bye-bye. Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.